Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, Redcasters, be sure to subscribe to our channel and ring the bell to be notified about our latest videos. Go Big Red.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, the Husker Fan Sports Show.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast. I'm your host, David Gaspers, and I'm with Boomer.
Well, just here enjoying the podcast and waiting for the tip-off of the Iowa-Creighton game, the Iran-Iraq War of college basketball for us here.
Okay. And I'm also with Redcast Rob.
Sorry,
how can you top that, Rob?
I, you know what? I got nothing. No, I was just thinking to myself how happy I was that it's college basketball season. Arizona defeats Duke in a huge matchup last Friday. And not only that, but Nebraska men's basketball is 3-0 for the first time in the Harburg era. And not only that, but they've covered the spread all three times.
The Heinrich Harburg era? He's playing basketball now?
I said Hoiberg, didn't I? Did I say Harburg?
No, that's okay.
Sorry, man. We can get to Heinrich Harburg soon enough, but I meant Hoiberg. I mean,
they're similar last names. I will give you that.
Yeah, and he is technically correct. This is the first time men's basketball has been 3-0 in the Harburg era, too.
So. Yeah, that's true, too. But, well, you know, is it Novacek? Is it Novacek? Is it, Steinberg? Is it Steinberg? I just can't get it.
Yeah. It's true. Tomatoes. Point is, Rob, yes, Nebraska basketball is off to a good start. Strength of schedule may not be quite where it needs to be, but that's going to start to change very soon. I think they still have Stony Brook. Now, Stony Brook is the Stony Brook University that went to the Final Four not that long ago, right, Boomer? So
I don't know how long ago it was, but it's the Stony Brook University. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's a formidable foe. I don't care if they have a RPI in the 200s. They've had more success in the tournament than us by far. And then we'll start Big Ten play here before you know it. But before we get to Nebraska basketball, we have plenty of football still to talk about. And the Huskers did suffer another difficult defeat, this time at home against Maryland, where the offense just simply could not get out of their way again with five total turnovers. And I do want to know what team has actually had more quarterbacks throw an INT in one game than what we did with three quarterbacks and each one throwing an interception. Boomer, when will the madness ever end?
Well, in a few weeks for sure, but that's
sorry.
Yeah,
you got me there, Boomer.
I mean, that whole game was just, I think everyone was speechless by the end of it. It's just insert quarterback, watch them turn the ball over. It was just incredible how much that happened, and it's, you couldn't write it and expect, if you're writing this for a sitcom, or nobody would believe you, or straight to video movie.
This is like Minnesota State.
Nobody would believe this happened. Every quarterback you put in there, they just turn the ball right over. And disappointing part was, this was even a game of the defense generated a good solid number of turnovers. I mean, three turnovers led to all 10 of our points.
Got 10 points out of it.
Scoring drive from Maryland on our own six. So, I mean,
yeah.
You think you generate three turnovers and get points off of them, you think you'd be fine in that case. But when you counter that with five turnovers, that's a problem. So,
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, the show, we've got a few questions, I believe, Boomer. We'll try to address that. We'll talk about offense and defense. Maybe we'll sprinkle in a little Nebraska ball and get to the BetCast at the end. Let's start with scarlet colored glasses and talk all things Husker football. And Rob, Let's before we dive into those questions, maybe you will help us talk a little bit more about what we saw on Saturday and what we expect this coming Saturday in Madison. You are the Kool-Aid guy, so tell me how we're still making a bowl game.
Well, we're going to win this week.
All right, I like it. You
know, and we're going to beat Iowa. I mean, how?
That would make everyone forget the
seriously,
last 2 weeks.
Seriously, really though, Dave, I mean, it's literally the most simple of calculations. Don't turn the ball over. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you would think that that'd be something that is put at a premium, and yet somehow, you know, we continue to find ways to screw that up. You know, and it's like, there's one quarterback on the team. Again, I can't throw individuals under the bum, but there's one quarterback under the team that I would be on the team that I would be happy to never see play another down in a Nebraska uniform ever again. You know, I had high hopes for the young man at one point. And at this point, I hope that he gets calluses from holding a clipboard. And you know, it's, and I get it. Like, Heinrich is also, you know, turn the ball over, but there's some kind of productivity with him while he's on the field in other scenarios. And Chuba, when he led that drive down the field, and if you want, we can get into that play call on third down. I'm not happy with it. I've said my piece. I think I've made peace with it at this point, but you know, I cry because I'm sad. I smile because I care. It might be, you know, but
well, Rob,
I
mean, Rob, before that drive
was one of the cleanest drives that I've seen Nebraska's offense put together the entire season. He throws the ball much better. Did he throw that interception? Yes, but that was just a cluster F of, like, you know, that play should have never been called, in my opinion, because nobody running that play on third and goal looked like they knew how that play was supposed to be run. You've got a third string quarterback, a freshman wide receiver who's supposed to be clearing out, and a guy who just came off the injured list who, you know, looked like maybe he wasn't quite sure exactly what was being called. Like, they were afraid that, like, they changed the play call's name or something because they were afraid that Michigan was on the other sideline or something. Like, I have no idea what was going on there, but it was like watching, I don't know, what are those old, the Keystone Cops run around.
Boomer, what was the question I asked, Rob? I forget.
It was, I have no idea either. Like, you asked me scarlet color glasses and to be positive about it, and I'm having
a hard time. I asked you how we were going to reach a bowl game, and you essentially gave me all the reasons why we shouldn't, because...
Well, you know what, Dave? It's your fault, man. You brought me into this, Dave. You brought me into this. How are we going to win? We're going to win one more game is what we're going to do, Dave. That's how we're going to do it.
No, I
mean, are we going to win one more game? I sure as hell hope so, but I thought we were going to win one more game 2 games ago. And I think, I'm sorry, I'm losing my mind.
Let's start there. Let's start there. I'm going to throw it to Boomer so Red Cast Rob can take a deep breath. Because, you know, this reminds me, you sent a text to us earlier this week saying, I'm still mad about Saturday. I can sense that from you. I can sense some angst. But that's we're a very professional podcast here. And let's keep on the high ground. Yes. So Boomer, if I would ask that question to you, how is Nebraska gonna win one of these 2 games? I think Rob was onto something there with playing a clean game, but how does the coaching staff help this team try to play at least a cleaner version of Nebraska football on Saturday in Madison?
Yeah, that's exactly what it has to be. It has to be a clean game. And, you know, we're partially there. Like, these last couple of weeks, I mean, penalties have not been a problem. We've had what?
Amazing.
One penalty in last week or against Maryland. And did we have any against Michigan State?
No. We've been one in the last 8 quarters.
Yeah. And even those were, you know, the pass interference penalty. All right. That's during the game. It happens. We're not seeing those, you know, false starts. We're not seeing the delays of game. You know, we're having to take timeouts to get a play in coming out of a commercial break or field goal.
We take some timeouts to avoid some delay of games. But,
right. But it hasn't been terrible. They haven't been, you know, just awful. So that part of the game's been cleaned up, but a lot of it does seem to be the turnovers that we're generating. And I know this has kind of been the debate on Husker Twitter over the last few days, is are we calling plays that are best suited for the players we have on the field, putting them in a position to win? You know, and I think it's real. You know, we have quarterbacks that have athletic talent. I don't know if they're all currently superstar quarterbacks. Well, I don't think anyone would say they are. But
sure.
Are we asking them to, yep. to run plays that they're just not quite capable of doing at this stage?
To a group of receivers yeah. that are also very right. inexperienced.
To the group of receivers right? that are young, inexperienced. They're you know thrown in here, probably weren't expecting to have to play this year, but they do. And, you know, with the guys we have that are injured in our patchwork running back core, you know, it are we asking too much of what we have out there? And I think that's been the big debate on Husker Twitter. Yeah. So I think the first thing is you know, you have to stick with keep the penalties under control, which they've done the last couple of weeks. It sounds so obvious. You got to cut down on turnovers, but you call plays that put you in a better position where you're not throwing those interceptions, where you're not just heaving balls up there to looks like they're punts essentially, or you know, you're playing a game of 500 or whatever in the background, just throwing it up there.
That's and what catches a few it. Of them look like.
Yeah, they kind of look that way. So maybe do we dial that back a little and give Emmett Johnson more than 17 touches a game? Can he do 20, 25 possibly?
Even? Yeah.
You know, do something like that. Because, you know, you look at Wisconsin and there, I know we've said this about Maryland and Michigan State. So, you know, we seem to be the slump busters.
Be lately. Careful. Yeah.
But yeah, they are struggling and, you know, they're kind of in a position where if you compare like Wisconsin and Nebraska, you know, the situations we both went into this year, both starting new coaches, both kind of trying to change the culture there. But Wisconsin, I think, has a tougher challenge of changing that culture than Rule did because there was nobody that realistically thought Frost should be here anymore this season.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, that was an easy firing, you know, as compared to, you know, Paul Chryst getting fired midseason or whatever it was last year in Wisconsin kind of right. caught everyone off guard. And then you had
and everyone the interim, thinking it was going to Leonard. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you had the popular interim coach Leonard. And we had the same thing with Mickey Joseph, but Leonard didn't get the job and Joseph, you know, didn't get the job either, but that kind of took care of himself with some off-field issues.
Yep,
so there isn't right. that, isn't that group of, you know, loyalists, I think, to the old regime there. And that's a tough job for Fickell to step into. And I think you've heard a lot of that from Wisconsin, you know, the fan base this week and players. Yep. There's some kind of dissension in the ones that think they're putting effort into it and some that aren't. And, you know, I've watched them play the last couple of weeks, and I don't know if that entire team is putting effort into this. So
it's hard to explain
yeah.
what happened last week versus Northwestern, where really the Wildcats kicked their butts in that first half. It was 24-3 or something like that.
Yeah, they did get their quarterback back, you know, Northwestern. But then again, so did, you know, Wisconsin. But
yeah,
just, Mordecai yeah, it didn't was out seem there. Like, yeah, Wisconsin. Yeah.
Braylon Allen was back out there. He only got three yeah. carries, though, right?
Yeah,
so I'm sure there's talks about the Wisconsin OC right now, just like we're you know, talking are, about Marcus yeah,
there's, there's been a lot of talk about that, about just are they – too conservative and just playing everything too safe. And and their offense hasn't looked good. So it is a team that I think.
So what you're telling me is how we're going to get to a bowl game is we're going to win this week because Wisconsin's vulnerable.
Yes.
It's deer season. Apparently no one's going to be there. And exactly. We're going to walk into Camp Randall on NBC primetime and, yep. and steal a win, get to six. And where I think of this essentially is with these both these next two games, we just need to outdo what the other teams have done in the past to us, Wisconsin and Iowa. Really out Iowing Iowa would potentially put you in that game in the sense of
we
like
did last year.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were more explosive last year, but I mean, literally, Iowa just doesn't do anything on offense and waits for the other team to mess up and get short fields and kicks field goals when field goals present themselves. And then they eventually break through. And, you know, what was the last weekend? They're up 3-0 and a half versus Rutgers. They end up winning 22-0 because they just, it's like a war of attrition. That Iowa defense is going to hold you back. If you make them drive against that Iowa defense for all 80 yards, it's going to be tough. And eventually they get short fields and can score points. We have to figure out how to play that game. We seem to have an offense and a defense that are pretty much mirror images of that Iowa formula, but we refuse to actually, at least this one year, capitalize on what we have there. So, you know, I do think we can win this Saturday, but they have to go out there and prove it. And the opportunity will be there. All right. Now, I think Rob is biting at the bit to talk about offense, because when I asked him a far more global question, he dove right into a 3rd and 6 at the goal line. So let's talk about our all things offense with the scoring explosion, which is anything but what we have as an offense right now. And Boomer, do we have any of those mailbag questions that might prompt some discussion and keep Rob at least a little more calm?
Yeah, I think so. You know, first off, this is just kind of a general one that came out of here and kind of deals with the quarterbacks. And it's a hypothetical, and it's hard to say, but, you know, how would Henrik Hartberg be or look if Sims didn't take most of the first-team reps in spring and fall camp? Again, hypothetical, but...
Oh, that was on my... I posted something today. Correct. Yep. Yeah.
Rob, what do you think?
Who knows? I mean, honestly, it seems... Well, honestly, it seems like...
That's podcast gold, Rob.
Well, I mean, God, you want my hypothetical on a hypothetical.
Like, simply, Hartberg is going to be that much better if he is anointed the starter this spring and goes into next year. Will he suddenly make this huge jump?
I mean, is his arm motion going to get better? Is he going to not have happy? Is he going to learn to not have happy feet in the pocket? Is he going to learn to go through his progressions, like at least one or two of them? Like those are three things.
Those are all things that would need to do,
that he could learn to do better in the spring, mm-hmm. or maybe even in bowl practices. You know, and so I mean, sure, reps with the first team are always going to be better for any player, but counterpoint to that. Most of the players that he was probably throwing to on the second and third teams when he was out there practicing this spring are on the field right now. So,
yep, it's true.
You know, there's that many injuries that we've had to where he's probably throwing to the guys he's been throwing to all along. So, I mean, mm-hmm. that it's, you know what, question asker, it's really hard. It's really hard to know because, you know, maybe there's something changed in his throwing motion and, you know, it's hard.
He's had that. He's 6'5" and he throws time.
Yeah, but wasn't he throwing over the top in high school or something? Like, I don't know. I remember somebody saying that at one point.
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, so does that answer that question though? I mean, I feel like maybe not because he's been playing with a lot.
Yeah. I think what your answer tells me, Rob, is that it's obviously a nuanced answer, but it's not just about Henrik Hartberg, but who's actually coaching him to improve his footwork, improve his throwing motion, mm-hmm. To improve his ability to read a defense, to go through his progressions, yeah. right? And the question is, do we think that Marcus Satterfield giving him all of his attention over the next 9 months would make a dramatic difference? I don't know. That's the question I have in my head because – if we remember our hiring of the staff, which took, you know, a few weeks to or longer, really.
Yeah.
There was rumors out there that, you know, one of the folks that Matt Rhule had eyed to be maybe co-offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach was Jake Peets, former Husker, who is highly regarded in that field and is still in the NFL with the Rams. He chose to stay with the Rams last year. Now maybe that might change again. The Rams are struggling again. So maybe he might reconsider.
He might get fired. You know what I mean?
Another offer, right? You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, fired, like but... even I think if you asked Rhule on a lie detector test, was Marcus Satterfield his first choice to be quarterbacks coach? I think it's pretty hard to think that he would have to say no. I had someone else in mind for that. So could they tweak? I mean, he made it very clear in his press conference this week that Marcus Satterfield is going to be the OC, not just this year, but going forward.
Yeah.
They want to keep the same nomenclature and all those type of things. And he believes in the offense that Satterfield runs, even though he's never produced better than a top 71 offense. But I think it could be helped a lot if he had a dedicated quarterbacks coach or someone that is at least more focused on that. And that could be something they could do some tweaking to the offensive staff. At least that's what comes to mind. So,
yeah.
Maybe, yeah. I guess my answer to that question, go ahead, Boomer.
No, go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead and answer yours, Dave.
I just wrap that up. Like, just to wrap that up, I guess I don't know if it would have made a difference this year because I just don't know if even Jeff Sims had the right coach for what he needed, but maybe going forward, we might have the right type of dedicated staff to help develop our quarterbacks, because I think this year has made it very clear that you need more QB development in this type of program. And I have one more thought on that, but I can get back to it. Boomer, go ahead.
Yeah, that was kind of going to lead into my question on that. It's kind of a tangent on that. I mean, do we think Sims was having these issues in practice, you know, summer ball or, you know, fall camp? I mean, I don't think we heard about it.
I don't think it's been a – my guess on that, obviously not there. It's not a practice thing with Jeff Sims. It's when the lights turn on and the 80,000 people are there. And the proof is in the pudding. This is when we went all in on Jeff Sims, and I had arguments with Honky about this and how we handled our quarterback situation, and why I wasn't as bullish on this team and why he thought we were going to go 9-3. And to his credit, we almost could have done that even with all the problems. We're only a few plays here or there from doing it.
Yeah.
Is that Jeff Sims has a track record of, I believe, 4 years of college starting QB play. He's a turnover machine the whole time. He's
never Dave, you were right. QB die into here, I'm just going to say, you were right, Dave.
Right?
You were right. I mean,
the evidence was there, right?
Yeah, you were right.
Same thing with Marcus Satterfield. I don't necessarily think Marcus Satterfield's a horrible OC and might be the type of right OC to play complementary football to what Matt Rhule wants to do with his defense and win in the Big Ten. But to think that Marcus Satterfield is going to start producing top 50 offenses anytime soon, there's no evidence that that's going to happen. He might start producing top 70 offenses, which might be enough to be very competitive.
It would be right now. That's absolutely.
But to think that we're going to have an explosive offense under Marcus Satterfield anytime soon, it would be contrary to all the evidence that is out there for his offensive system and play calling. So, yeah. So. I would say that I don't think it was in practice. I think it was actually in the games, which would have given me the red flag. The concern I have with that, Boomer, and that was a good segue from what I was talking about and where I was going to go, was what's my concern is that I was looking at the transfer portal from last year, right? Who was there last year? Who were the best quarterbacks to get? And what did they do this year, right? Because, I mean, you can always look at Caleb Williams going from Oklahoma to USC and say, like, oh, wow, there's a transfer that wins the Heisman is going to be probably the number one pick in the NFL draft. So the top quarterbacks last year, Sam Hartman had a prolific career at Wake Forest, went to Notre Dame, doing okay, been a little banged up, but hasn't actually had a better season at Notre Dame than he did ever at Wake Forest, really. Devin Leary also came into the season injured. It now appears a little bit healthy for Kentucky and is performing a little bit better, but hasn't had a great year. Hudson Card, we played Hudson Card and beat Hudson Card. Shador Sanders, I would say that we also played him and he was pretty darn good, but he's a one-man show out there. Some guy named Walker Howard, is he actually the Ole Miss starting quarterback? I don't know. Brennan Armstrong, who left Virginia to go to NC State to replace Devin Leary. He got benched in place of MJ Morris, who's now entered the transfer portal, or likely will, and we may be in hot pursuit of him. What I'm trying to get here is Tanner Mordecai. None of these guys like blew the doors off of anything this year, right? I would still take Sam Hartman, right? Or some of these other guys, but it's not like last year's transfer class for QBs were stellar, right? Luke Altmaier for Illinois, and just goes on and on. Graham Mertz, would be excited if we got this year's version of Graham Mertz in the transfer portal. Probably not.
When did Penix go to Washington?
That's like 3 years ago.
Was it? Because that guy's been
playing sometime in the middle of like his eighth college year.
So I mean, what you're hoping for is you get a Michael Penix or a Bo Nix or a Caleb Williams, but with what this offense looks like right now and who do you have as your OC and quarterbacks coach, does that seem likely that we're going to draw someone of that caliber to Nebraska? I don't know. So
Rob, and to be fair too, Caleb Williams is a really bad example in that anyway, because he was a package deal. I mean, he was with Lincoln Riley, right? He's Lincoln Riley's kid. He brought him with him to USC. He's going from, how often do you see a Power 5 go to a Power 5 and be successful, right? Most of these kids go into the transfer portal from a Power 5 and end up somewhere in like a school of five or whatever they call it, the group of five, and group of five, FCS school, right? So it's not So, I mean, yeah, I mean, to your point, Dave, which, by the way, I credit to you, man. I think that's the longest answer you've ever given on a RedCast in the history of the show. and so that was really impressive. But, yeah, I mean, again, like it's very rare. You find you just reeled off like 20 guys and maybe three of them are having success in Power Five right now. And one of them, again, was like, you know, he basically, you know, moved away from mom with dad to go to school. You know what I mean? Like that's mm-hmm. what happened. Lincoln Riley left Oklahoma for the USC job, his dream job, and took his quarterback with him. And not only that, but Spencer Rattler didn't even stick around. You know what I mean? He even took off from Oklahoma. So, you know, it's like,
yeah, no,
it's really hard to find guys in the transfer Spencer portal. Rattler. And we need to figure out, like, you know, are the guys that we got coming in too? Like, you know, we've got like a, what, you know, top 11 or whatever that competition was called, quarterback coming in as a freshman, you know, and
be a lot to put on his shoulders.
It really would, but you know, he's playing high level football, high school football. I get it, but it's high level high school football and he's being very consistent. He's having a great season this year. If I'm thinking correctly. Yeah, right. And it seems, and as you know, like a lot of these schools try to run the same kind of systems that Nebraska, right? Isn't that kind of a tradition in the state of Nebraska?
Yeah, I don't know if that's the case right now. I don't know.
You know, but
I'm not that familiar with Bellevue West, but I think it's probably.
Well, he's got legs. He can throw, and you know, and
more of a traditional quarterback that has mobility. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, I mean, I guess looking at the quarterback room today and looking at who's going to be back, I do think it's likely that Harburg will be here and have a chance to develop. I do think that Chubba Purdy likely will be back. I'll be really intrigued if he starts this week. It sounds like, you know, he has a groin issue that needs to be addressed in the off season, but he did scramble and looked, you know, to run on that one drive. He's had those drives before, Boomer, if I remember right, last year or the year before when he started the game. I can't remember when that was. He had some success, limited success on a drive or two, and then struggled for kind of the rest of the game. He does have a live arm, though, and he looks like he might be the answer on Saturday. Who's your best bet on who's starting on Saturday?
It was interesting the way, you know, Rule put it. I think it was Rule when he mentioned that, you know, you've got Harburg with a bad ankle sprain. You've got, like you said, Chubba Purdy with a groin issue. And you've got Sims healthy, and we're still figuring out who the starter is going to be. Well, that kind of tells you their opinion of one of the
It's awfully hard to trust Jeff at this point.
Yeah, you hate to call him out or say that on this.
Yeah, but it really is.
It is. I think they're going to go with – I mean, I'll think if – Harburg thinks he can go, they'll start him, but they'll keep him on a fairly short leash, and if they feel the need to put Purdy in, they'll do that. So I think they might think that Harburg might give him the best chance to win just with general mobility, but if he's not mobile, then
Harburg can't rely on passing
the entire game. Yeah, if he can't run and he doesn't have the speed that, you know, just the straight, you know, up the field speed that he does have, then I think they'll go to Purdy fairly quickly if that's the.
I think they might go to Purdy right away on that one, Boomer. I think it's
possible. Yeah, again, I think it just depends on the health of both of them. I don't know how how Harburg's ankle is and how Purdy's groin.
Because
is.
I think from Purdy's perspective, I don't know how bad the groin injury is, but I mean, this is his opportunity to kind of almost put his claim to the starting job next year, right? I mean, if he could come out and win a game or two here.
But then I do also wonder, you know, how many reps has he gotten in practice? Because, you know, if Sims was the starter most of the season and then Harburg kind of submitted that second job, and
how much time must be serious enough.
Are we throwing him out there and, you know, to the Wolves already? I don't know. So that's a question too they have to ask. I don't know. So what, you know, how much the playbook is he ready for? How much is he ready to mesh with these receivers and the running backs that we have now? I don't know.
At this point, though, Boomer, I mean, like, again, I mean, the point of we're not going to try to sit here and diss Jeff Sims. I mean, I don't know how Chubba could be at this point any rougher around the edges as a quarterback than Harburg has shown the last few weeks. Heinrich, all his credit, he's won three really big games for us there in a row, and and has won games as a starter more than anyone else on this roster. But some of the throws he's missed so bad, you know, and he really needs a chance to step back and maybe see that. And it's tough being out there. So I don't know. It's going to be a difficult decision, and hard to say.
Rob, but I guess it adds a wrinkle that, you know, you got to prepare for three quarterbacks when you play us. You never know who you're going to get.
Yeah.
So there we go.
They're all about the same, though. It's not
I got an idea. Let's put them all on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
Who's going to get the ball?
That's right.
Well, it might be Wisconsin but at that point.
Yeah.
That
would be. That's a good point, Boomer. Let's break down the third and six a little bit, Rob, because you were going into it. And I just want to comment. We had someone.
We're officially international right now.
We've been international. We've had folks stationed in the Middle East and whatnot. But Philippines, excellent. Very cool.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm assuming it's probably military or otherwise I just don't want to know.
It could just be a, you know.
On vacation, maybe chilling at home. I don't know what time it is in the Philippines right now. Maybe they're, you know,
hanging out. I don't know.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah. The third and sixth play is perplexing. And I mean, it allows us to talk a little bit about Marcus Satterfield as well as not just the quarterback play, but the offense and how disjointed they looked almost all game. The fact that we looked really good on that drive. It seemed like Chuba Purdy really was just kind of winging it for a while.
You know, there, Honky right? even texted. It was one of the nicest drives that he's seen this team put together all year, right? Like,
it was kind of wild, though. I mean, Chuba was just scrambling in every direction, and the throw to Kemp wasn't actually all that good, but it got the job done. And then Emma Johnson had a great run. Yeah. As soon as he got tackled there, I was like, oh, God, I wish he could have, you know, got through, or Chuba the next play, right, where he gets 11 or something like that. I'm like, we need to score from outside the 20, right? Because I was like, as soon as it was first and goal to six, I was like, okay, now this is where it's going to get hard for this team. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, it seems like, and Rob, you listen to the press conferences, that Chuba actually kind of improvised on that first and goal play where it should have been a handoff, but he somehow took the ball and rolled out and just had to throw it out.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe he wasn't comfortable with whatever was going on there, and so he kind of moved.
Well, yeah, they were in the backfield right away. I don't know if a running play would have been any more effective.
But, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was like a broken play and or something at that point, right? Like
a bit of a wasted down, and then we do hand the ball off to Johnson and lose it. Puts you in a difficult third and six. Now, at that point, Boomer, you know, if you're Iowa, if you're trying to play like Iowa, they are clearly just going to hand that ball off again. And if it breaks, it breaks. And if it doesn't, they are going to kick the field goal. And they're going to say, okay, you go ahead, Maryland. You figure out how to score against that defense with, 75 yards to go and in 3 minutes or so. But we did not.
Well, look who showed up.
Whoa.
Oh, my God.
What's up, Honk?
Whoa. So is he in the Philippines? So
it's, yeah. Is it 11:35 a.m. on Wednesday where you are, Honky?
How's it going, Honk?
Okay. Yeah, I'm not going to lie, Redcasters. This was a little unexpected.
It was.
But I'm actually smiling.
Oh. I heard somebody was from the Philippines on. I kind of wanted to
check out what you guys are talking about. So,
yeah.
Well, it's obviously pretty important that we're getting an international, you know, crowd today. We were just talking about the infamous third and goal, the sixth play call, and the lack of execution, right? Because it had so many things wrong with it. So, Honky, have you had more time to digest and replay that that down over in your head about 1,000 times?
Yeah, I mean it's tough because it's an execution issue at the end of the day. I mean, as Rule said, that it's a pretty common play that just about any offense would run. But we've managed to make some pretty obvious plays look difficult when there's a lot of things that have to go right there. And, you know, we have a little bit better routes run from the outside in. We probably are going to get the guy open. You have freshman receivers on the field. You've got a young QB in his first drive. I mean, there's just a lot of things there. And so I guess probably the strongest argument would be just let's get a little more conservative at the 5-yard line. Let's pound it.
Why put it out there? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And really even arguably would be a more damning play would have been, I think it was the first down where they thought they called the run, but he turned it into a run pass option, did something right. That they weren't expecting him to, a la kind of the Armstrong back against Illinois back in 2015. It's like, if you really want to just make sure that this is a play where we're going to run the ball, you know, we've got to be able to have, it has to be so simplified in a call where you can't even turn it into something that you're not expecting it to be. I guess that would be my best advice there, especially when dealing with young guys like that. So, yeah.
I haven't played all year.
Yeah. I mean, when you're at the 5-yard line, which by the way, Purdy, what a great drive that was. What a great job they did to get move 90 yards down the field. Cause I mean, I have as big of an issue with our starting field position as I do anything. Mm-hmm. We can't start a drive unless it's at our 3, 5, or 7, it seems like.
And that was after the fumble at like the 3-yard line, right? I mean,
yep. And so we start at, which that actually was, thankfully, we got the ball at the 3-yard line that time. It wasn't a punt, you know, catch at the 5. This was the defense stepping up and making a play. But you know, when you get down to the 5-yard line there, if nothing else, the two things I really want to see is the clock continuing to move. And then if you can get the touchdown, that's awesome. But, man, if we pound it up the middle for 3 straight plays and we take 2 more minutes off the clock and you kick a field goal, then you're feeling pretty good where you're at least being up. So.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. It to your point of the execution of the play that was called, that's probably just as frustrating. I mean, like that it was executed that poorly, right? And that blame is laid on virtually everyone on that field. All 11 really didn't execute that play. But when I saw the play, you know, live, I didn't even really recognize it as a corner route. Let's go into the pylon. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, the ball was thrown too far in. The route wasn't run correctly. Malachi doesn't really run his route correctly at all. Chuba's eyeing the play the whole time. Because Malachi is not really executing his route properly, his defender can eye Chuba and Chuba's just staring down in this alley. So I can say all those things and sound like I'm blaming the players. I kind of blame the coaching staff to put them in that position, I guess. I just don't feel like that moment in time, that seemed to be like what you needed to do, right?
I think that's the biggest feedback I've heard against Satterfield as much as anything is in Rule in this.
Are you the play call?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, the head coach is responsible for all of it. But basically, it's not that the plays aren't there. They are. I mean, from the first play of some of those games earlier in the year that we've talked about, like we threw the interception against, who was it, Northwestern or Purdue? I forget anymore. But, you know, the play's there. The play's open. Okay, I get it. It's not about if the play design is open. It's can we execute those plays? Now, to Rule's point, he has said multiple times, they're not throwing these interceptions in practice. So, you know, the idea is like, you know, they're doing something different in the game than they are in practice. All I can say to answer that, since I'm not at practice, is, and I would say the same thing to Frost or any of our former coaches, is what are we doing in practice? You know, how game-like are we making it, you know, so that we can have as real of a feeling. You want to be able, as a coach, you want to be able to walk out of a practice and go, hey, these guys can run the play, and I feel like they can run it in a game, you know? And you don't feel that, then you got to either dumb things down or do things differently. Or I loved a lot of the option that we were running early in the season. But that's a, you commit to that or you don't. I mean, you can't just sprinkle little bits of that in. So I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know exactly what we should be doing. There's parts that I really like, you know, there's parts that look really good. That's one of the frustrating things too. And it's not like everything looks terrible. It's just your yards per point just couldn't be better shown than on that drive. Yeah, what a great drive. What an awesome 90 drive, yards. 90 yards. And you walk away with 0 points and frustration.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the five turnovers, everything just adds up to where, I mean, we've talked about this at length throughout the season, is the offense just needs to score 17 to 20 points and you're going to win a whole bunch of games. Well, we've got some examples here in the last several weeks where we just haven't been able to get to that number. Right. You know, and I think again, this week, if we somehow can get to 20 points, and maybe that's because of a defensive score or special teams play of some sort. I don't care how you get there, but I mean, if we can get to 20, we'll have a shot against Wisconsin, no doubt about it. But if we score 10 points again, you know, you're probably going to get the same result.
Puts a lot of stress. I went back and was looking through some former seasons. It was when I sent you guys the Charlie Ward stats earlier today. But if you go back to 1988, our last two games, if you remember, it's the last season of Barry Switzer. We beat them 7-3, Oklahoma. And the week before that, we beat Colorado 7-0. If you went into the final 2 weeks of that season and said, we're going to score 14 points on our last two games, you're probably thinking you're going 0-2. And, you know, there we are. We beat them both, you know, held them both to 3 points combined. But that's a pretty rare deal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe that could be replicated because we need it. Yeah, that's the truth. Well, let's talk about some good things, and that is definitely on the defensive side of the ball. So let's throw the bones and talk about that Tony White defense, and they did about everything you could ask from them against a better offense, right? Maryland did produce some yards. They do have some playmakers. They have a quarterback that is talented, but at the end of the day, they only got their 13th point on the last play of the game. Boomer, what do you think about the defensive performance, and can they do it two more weeks?
There's no reason to think they can't. I mean, again, the performance here, they're performing well enough to win games with just a competent offense. You know, we talked about Satterfield's offense. If they get to the 70s, yeah, that'll win you most of the games this season. We're not even, unfortunately, close to that, you know, at this point in the stage. But, yeah, they're daring enough to win games. I mean, you're keeping Maryland to 10 points for most of that game. And, you know, that last drive, you know, Maryland's, you know, started running the ball reasonably well on that drive. I think the defense just, it's hard to keep that up for an entire game. And, you know, they finally put together a good drive. You know, they have had a few weaknesses where, you know, teams can throw on them a little bit. You know, Maryland had some success on that. You know, Tagovailoa was a pretty mobile quarterback, and he kept himself pretty safe for most of that game. We didn't generate nearly the sacks. I kind of hoped we would, like, you know, Penn State did. We managed six. What do we have? One for sure.
But I can. Yeah, one was called back.
Yeah, so yeah. There weren't a lot, unfortunately. Yeah. I hoped for a little more pressure on him than we were able to generate. But still, overall, when you're holding teams to 10 points for most of the game, and like I said, we generated three turnovers, which led to 10 points for our offense in that third quarter. Yep. And
stopped them from scoring
at least a field goal, if not a touchdown, on that drive where they could have gone up, you know, 17-10 and with 9 minutes to go in the game. That would have been killer for us. But they kept you in it, they put you in a position to win. I don't think you could ask anything more for it. And there's no reason to think they can do it these next 2 weeks, because the offenses they're going to be facing aren't even up to Maryland snuff. So,
yeah,
you know, yeah. I expect a similar performance these next couple of weeks, but again, it's just going to come down, can we get complimentary football out of the other two faces of the game? So
it's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
That is the question, isn't it? Honky, what are you thinking on with this defense?
Well, I think it's important to get Quentin Newsom back. That was a big loss last week, an unexpected loss. Sounds like he got injured in practice, but having him back, you know, Wisconsin is doing more of an air raid now too, so getting him back. But I was very proud and impressed with how Omar Brown stepped up. Javon Wright had an amazing game, and so some guys are stepping up there. We had plenty of young guys along the D-line again, and then Nash and Ty Robinson. I mean, Robinson, he's playing himself into a draft pick here the way he's been the last few weeks. And Huttmacher, I just hope that he – I hope we have him for another season. I think he has a
– I think so, yeah.
I think we'll get him back for another year. I think NIL can actually help play a role with that, and he's one of the guys that is doing well with NIL to begin with. So if he's a good example of NIL, if you can make six figures, you know, 100,000, 150, whatever on NIL, or he can go into the draft and be a fifth round guy, maybe coming back for one more season and you're not being hurt, you know, too badly financially, and get yourself up to a second or third round draft pick, that can be more than worth it coming back for another season. So a lot of guys stepping up, so many names, so many different guys making plays. I mean, how many guys have we had make tackles for losses this year? How many different, it's just been crazy how many players they've gotten out there
from, right? I mean, Williams comes out of nowhere.
Yeah. Midway through the year. And he's one of those guys that in June they brought in at the JUCO camp that they did. So, there's this frustrating part that, you know, we've lost a few games in ways that we don't want to lose. But then I always am trying to keep in perspective the race to six idea. The idea of bowl game is so important.
Just get to that.
You win one of these games, like, you know, I'd be so ready to tweet out, you know, after winning one of these games that, hey, Nick Saban went 7-6 his first year at Bama. Hey, you know, Pete Carroll went 6-6 his first year at USC. Bob Stoops went 7-5 at Oklahoma. These blue blood rebuilds take a year or so. And what would give anyone the idea that Rule can't do this based off anywhere else he's been? If he can guess back to the bowl game in year one, and he has shown to be a year two and year three build, you know, my gosh, I mean, we are a quarterback away. And that quarterback, I think it's so important. I've seen so much frustration from people about the quarterback, but that quarterback can come from someone that's currently on the team and be developed. Yep. It can come from someone that we recruit, and can come from someone that we bring in with the portal. I think I was listening to you earlier, Dave. You guys had the discussion about all the different examples of portal quarterbacks that have worked and haven't. That there's no guarantee any one thing is going to be it. And so I want to hedge my bets on having a lot of different options. I want to have
as many options as possible.
I want a portal guy.
He always was an option guy, though. Yeah.
Well, that's I am, but I want a portal guy coming in. I want Danny Kalen coming in. I want Harburg and Purdy back, and I want all four of them competing. And some, you know, the cream will rise out of that. That's what I'd prefer to see, anyways. But I'm not ready to just throw away one player. Although I'll tell you, Sims's performance. This is about as bad of a the turnovers he's had, that's just baffling. I feel bad for him. I genuinely feel bad for him, but man, that's been bad.
You know, we could have Jake Sorensen on, and, you know, he was on kind of like where Sip and Bush, like, kind of make that transition in the morning where, like, they're on with Sorensen.
Yeah, sure.
Oh my God. There's a clip where Sorensen is just basically like, he's done. You know what I mean? Like, he was done. I mean, like, I've never heard a radio
and it feels like
Nebraska he was radio done. Personality like call out a player by name like that and just basically say, but he was just like, he should never take another snap for the Huskers again. And I hate saying that kind of stuff, but it's like, if he's on the field, guess what? I'm rooting for him. I want him because
he might start this week.
I mean, that's he might start this week.
Very well might start. Yeah, it's quite possible. And
the sad part is, you know, he was in that third quarter when we got 10 points off the turnovers. He got 10 points. He was the one that got us.
He was
playing well for a little bit, or at least well enough to score, and then the turnover bug happens again.
I don't know what you do for his confidence. That's the thing. Is at some point,
game on the sideline, you're just like, geez.
Yeah, and this is where I'm not trying to be the guy to pile on. I'm not trying to be the radio guy who's just calling him out. It's just But how do you have confidence after the results? I mean, it was it 6 picks and 30, 45 passes? I mean, it's, you know, and then you have the fumbles on top of that. It's just, it's been a rough go for him. And I feel for him. I genuinely do. But I don't know how you play him either. I really don't. I mean, this is, and you saw that. Why did Purdy get out there? It was one more turnover and eventually, you know, ruling them or sitting there going, we got to make a change.
Yeah. It's interesting this year. We don't have any, like, don't we typically have like a walk-on quarterback that's randomly be?
I mean, well, we have like Longvall, and then Longvall was another one of those JUCO transfer.
We could use that right now, Longvall.
Longvall, and then like Jake or Jack Wokey or Walk or something.
I think it's Wokey or Walkie. Yeah.
So we have, you know, number four and number five. I mean, if there was ever a season, if like a Logan Smothers could have stuck around, this would have been.
Oh, honky! Oh, you're.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been an ideal guy for what they're.
He would have fit the offense. He was, I mean, to your point, Casey Thompson wouldn't have fit this offense, but Logan Smothers would have been a perfect fit for what they've been trying to do for almost the entire year. And he would have been someone who has had game time experience. And yeah, it just Logan Smothers, we would have our sixth win already, I believe. I truly do.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's goes back to the point. He's one of those guys that was in the portal and now he's playing in what is that like a
Jacksonville State.
I get it's the back to the point that Honky and I are aligned on here is that we need as many options at that quarterback position going into 2024 as possible, right? And I wish we would have had one more option this year in the name of Logan Smothers because I
think no pun intended.
That's right. because I just, you know, get two guys from the portal. I don't care. I mean, like get one that's got a year of eligibility and one that's got three. Right. I mean, like figure out something, right. You know, I mean, Ole Miss took both some guy, I can't remember his name, like, Walker Howard. They also got Spencer Sanders. Remember is this Spencer Sanders from Oklahoma State had a very successful career there.
Yeah.
Apparently he was getting pushed out. He left. He went to Ole Miss. He played a little bit last week randomly, but he's barely played down there. I'm like, Spencer Sanders is also somewhat turnover prone, but I don't think he was as bad as Jeff Sims. And it had some flashes, right? I mean, like, I would take a Spencer Sanders. That'd be good enough, right? You know, but it's like, take two guys out of the transfer portal. I don't care. I want competition and figure it out. And it might be someone on the roster today. It might be a freshman. It might be someone who comes in in the portal.
You know, I've been doing my yoga and flexibility exercises at the gym. I was thinking maybe driving out.
I don't think you have eligibility, Ron.
Well, and they want someone great. They want someone over 5'5" too. So I mean, that would I think. But
like, Honky, we're like the same height.
I didn't offer my services up, did I?
Well, I mean. Harbor kind of throws from the side like he's 5'5".
So. I know. We throw from the same height. There's no doubt about that. You mentioned, Dave, you mentioned Oklahoma State. I mean, just imagine for a moment, to your point of like getting two transfers, imagine a kid like Zane Flores, who hasn't exactly worked his way up the depth chart there at Oklahoma State. They have a number of quarterbacks in front of him right now. Now, he may be loving Stillwater and no interest in coming back. Or let's say he decides, hey, I want to get into the portal. And you could go after a guy like that, which is essentially – it's recruiting a player from a year ago, just getting him through the portal.
So freshman, you're getting
gets your number there, but then you also can go after an older guy, someone that's, you know, 2, 3, 4 years out of high school, whatever, and you get a transfer like that. And if you can bring those two guys in, if you can bring in Danny Kalen, if you can, you know, keep Purdy and Harburg, and at least through an off season, let them work it out. And yeah, you may not keep every single one of them by next season, but that's what I want to see right now as much as anything. They've got to get it figured out. There's no doubt we can't have a second season of this kind of QB situation. We've seen how restless Husker Nation is in year one. And I do my best as one little guy there to try to preach a little bit of calm. You know, let's not fire the OC and bring in our fifth OC in 6 years. That doesn't tend to, you know, that and that's what Rule was having to answer against in his presser this week. He was having to answer against making changes and let's change the language one more time and bring in a new OC. And it's like, let's be a developmental program.
I think most Husker fans get that. They do also understand what good football looks like, and they know that what they've seen on the offensive side has not met that expectation, at least this year. And yeah, I mean, I don't think we need to have any sort of wholesale changes, but maybe some tweaks, because if you truly believe Marcus Satterfield is your OC, you need to maybe give him some better support to help develop these players, because it doesn't feel like they've developed well enough, at least within the first year.
What are your thoughts on I say this right now because we don't really have a full-time tight ends coach. Martin is kind of in a one-year deal, essentially. Now, when Satterfield was brought here, he was the OC and the tight ends coach, and with the idea that we were going to bring in a quarterbacks coach. Then Jake Peets didn't quite work out.
We mentioned this earlier in the show, actually.
Oh, did you? Okay, well then didn't listen. I'm sorry. I didn't
welcome
hear that
to part. The show.
No, but I think you go ahead and ask your question though.
Well, do you think that it's not that we're looking to change OCs necessarily, or at least I'm not trying to do that after 1 year, but does it make sense to bring in a quarterback specific coach and let Satterfield go back to just doing tight ends and being the OC?
That's exactly where I was going.
Dave made a great point of making that point, actually.
Okay.
And
I mean,
we don't need to repeat it just because I wasn't here.
It's just like Jake Peets was the guy that, you know, was targeted. We didn't get him. They had to adjust the staff, but we have an opportunity to do some tweaks there, and maybe that can make a difference, because we need to develop who we bring in and who we have on the roster to make it better, right? And that obviously wasn't Rule's first choice for a quarterback coach, and we could fix that. So
let me say one other thing with a coaching addition, and it doesn't have to be. And I'm not asking for any coach to leave. This guy could be brought on as an analyst again, but this is a repeat of about 4 years ago. Anything we can do to get Bill Bush involved with the program? You know, he's been spending this year, which is still on contract, is it, I believe this is his. You know, he's still getting paid from his contract there, but that I think is done at the end of this year. He's been doing the radio. He's been doing an amazing job on the radio. But you know, Mac and I went and watched him speak about a month ago, doing a luncheon and everything. Nebraska is an absolute dream school of his, and he's worked here 3 times. And I would have nothing. I feel nothing better than if he could ever work here for a 4th time in any capacity. We've seen Ron Brown. We've seen his name tossed around all kinds of times this year for the things he's helped out with this program. And he's not an assistant coach at any position. I just want to see Bill Bush somehow involved again. He's just too good. And he's right here in town. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd make tons of sense. And wouldn't think that would only help the program. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Anything else on football? Honky, are you dying to talk a little Nebraska ball for like about 2 minutes, and then we're going to do BetCast?
Yeah, I was actually, before I came on here, I went outside, turned the TV on. I built a gazebo where the hot tub was.
Oh,
and so
yeah.
the TV outside is actually, it's got Iowa Creighton on right now. And but last night I sat out there.
When the Iran-Iraq war, is what, as Boomer called it?
Is that what he called it? No.
Yes.
I watched the Ryder game last night and everything, and I've been trying to keep up with what Hoiberg's doing here in year three. It's nice to see us at 3-0, and it's nice to see a schedule that helps you get to 3-0.
Yes, they definitely built in a little bit of Charmin soft to start off the season, but a lot of other schools do the same thing. Hey, Stony Brook is up next, and they are a recent Final Four team. So
was it Stony Brook in the Final Four? Are you sure? Because Stony Brook's only made the tournament
one
time.
I think they're pretty new, Dave. I don't even think
they only made the tournament once in 2016 and lost to Kentucky.
Who they beat? Who did they beat?
Not in the tournament. They've only won once and they lost to Kentucky.
I think they won their conference.
Stony Brook made the College World Series. Look that up, Rob.
Maybe that's right.
They've made a run somewhere, but it's the wrong sport. I apologize.
Yeah,
might have been rowing. We don't know here.
You know what, Dave? It's okay, because I'm wrong a lot, so you're okay being wrong.
It was in the College World Series.
Any of our Stony Brook listeners chime in here.
Yeah. Well, anyway, after that, it does step up in competition. I think we have Oregon State in the Pentagon here relatively soon.
2012, Dave, they beat LSU and shocked the world.
There you go. So sorry, sometimes you get on a thought process.
Oregon State on Saturday at 3 o'clock on Peacock. Mm-hmm. So you can keep your subscription for a week and so 3 o'clock and then we kick off against Wisconsin that night in football at 6:30 or something. So game should be over by then.
5:30 local time for Dave and I.
And then before you know it, the Big Ten will be around the corner with those early December games. So we'll know a lot quicker what this team is made of. But so far so good. Seems like the not as splashy of lands with the transfer portal, but they also seem to be pretty effective so far. So that's exciting to see. And it's a team that does look more fashioned in the mold that Hoiberg has wanted, but also still rooted in that defense first mentality that was so successful last year. So
yeah, I mean they took last night, they had some of the offensive struggles that Boomer has highlighted with his graphs over the years. We've mm-hmm. struggled a bit, but we had the ability to step in and kind of have a Sadler kind of defense or whatever you want to call it. We'll hold the team to 45.
Eight minute run where they didn't score at all.
Yeah. And that's different than how we were playing defense 2 or 3 years ago. So, those games, we still could have had the same offensive struggles 2 years ago, but we're giving up 65 or 70 points and we might lose that one. So, we'll take the wins right now. I love having a couple of bigs out there at the same time. I think I was texting you guys that Mask. Yeah. And Alec, especially Alec, he's the guy we haven't had in a long time. We've had a lot of
6'8" power forward type guy,
who doesn't have to play the five. That's the thing. We've had some athletic 6'8" guys in the past, but he has to be our center because we don't have anyone else to have Mast out there. And there was a play last night where Mast shot the three, and he's actually a good enough 3-point shooter that we have a big Dave. You've wanted this since the day that Hoiberg got here. A big that can hit an outside shot. On this particular one, he misses it, but there's Alec to get the rebound. And it's like we've missed that kind of combination forever, it seems like, but definitely during the Hoiberg years. So I love seeing those two guys out there. Tominaga was his first game back, and he kind of struggled for a bit, but he'll get the rest knocked off. I mean, there's some players on this team, but it – it was funny. I don't know. Somebody posted something about, the different lineups, and there was one lineup where we scored a bunch of points and then skip on the
CJ and Alec.
So it's Parker on X. Posted crazy Nebraska ball stat. Through three games, Josiah Alec and CJ Wilter have played 86 possessions together. And in those 86 possessions, Nebraska has scored 106 points and allowed 51. They average roughly 71 possessions a game. And at that rate, those two alone would outscore opponents 88-42 in a game. That's crazy.
I like Skip's text. Simmer down, KenPom. Lindenwood, number 354. Florida A&M, number 347.
Yeah, but they're doing it against the teams they're supposed to be doing it against. They've covered all three games. They have covered all three games. When's the last time Nebraska started 3-0 and covered in all three?
Hey, I'm ecstatic. I would rather be 3-0 than where Michigan State's right now, even though,
This might be the first time in Nebraska history they've started 3-0 and covered in all three.
I don't know about that, Rob, but point taken.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll start talking a little bit more about Nebraska basketball as football winds down, but it's good to start getting it on the show, and hopefully they have a good start to the season so we can really feel like there's some energy behind the program going into the heart of the Big Ten season.
You know what? And our volleyball team right now is still kicking ass.
Didn't know that, Rob. Please expand.
I don't know, man. I just wanted to make sure that we were mentioning all the good that's going on out there. Okay.
Like, number one team in the country.
Baseball is like recruiting like crazy. We've gotten some great signees on our baseball team.
This is why you extend your athletic director's contract.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. That's right.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, let's wrap up with that before we go. Honky, what do you think about Trev getting this this contract? 8 years, 1.7 a year, has a bunch of other perks on there. Ted Carter struck the deal with him before he left for Ohio State. Thoughts?
I guess what Gene Smith at Ohio State was is leaving or has left. And so I think some of the thought was this will secure Trev from, you know, following Carter to Ohio State. I mean, it's a nice bump. It's a nice bump across the board. I just hope we have continued success with it, because every time we give one of these kind of contracts, if there's any kind of we struggle in any area, you know, you're going to hear about it. But I guess that's what you're getting paid for. I think Trev's done an amazing job. All the things that you've seen, the articles that have been written about it today. I mean, everything from getting 92,000 to show up here for the volleyball game, breaking an international record, to the improvements we're seeing. I think it was a good thing that Carter got it done now. Extend him. It removes any other kind of questions down the road. I mean, Trev's going to be here for a good long while. So let's just remove
him. Longer than expected, almost. Yeah.
I mean, well, I think he wants to be here through all the
construction
stuff. And also, once you get this thing going in football, I mean, a year or two from now, we're going to be sitting here talking about, you know, winning championships with Rule, right? Well, once you get it going, and we brought up the other blue bloods, the Alabamas under you know, Saban and Stoops at Oklahoma. If you get it going, it's a pretty good world as an AD then. You know, if you got your top program humming. And so we're not there yet, but I mean, he's made the big moves to get us to where hopefully we are about a year or two away from this thing really going.
Yep, absolutely. All right, good stuff. All right, Hunk, do you want to stick around for the BetCast? You want a party shot?
I think you can stick around. It'd be good for you.
No, I'm gonna head out and watch the basketball game out there in the gazebo.
It's nice time anyway, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, but no, you guys take care of it. It was just you guys look like
you apparently had a compelling enough conversation that you actually wanted to join us. So I will take that as a compliment.
It's like absolutely. I can't stop smiling.
All right, Hawk.
And Robert here, man. Needed that too. Yeah.
I did. Hey, guys. Man. I'm having all a right, good day. You made it better.
Have a good one.
Thanks for showing up.
The BetCast picks of the week.
All right, guys. Let's go through these in rapid fire with Honky joining the show. We're well over an hour already, so it's a lighter slate anyway. So not as many games out there. So let's speak up if you got something to say. If not, we'll move through each one of these pretty fast. Ready?
Yeah.
Let's start Friday night. Colorado somehow trying to figure out how they get bowl eligible. They're 4-6 going against Washington State. Also 4-6, I believe. Two teams that were ranked earlier this year and have completely fallen on hard times. Wazoo favored by 4.5 at home in Pullman, over under at 64. Keep in mind, Colorado has Utah the last game of the year. So they're very long odds to be bowl eligible at all, but this might be their last chance for a win. Anyone?
Thoughts? Yeah, I think Colorado pulls it off.
Ooh, all right, taking it. All right, Boomer?
Give me Wazoo at home. Neither of these teams are going to make a bowl, though. They both need two wins. And
yeah, take the over.
Then Wazoo has the Apple Cup.
Take the over on 64.
Yeah. I think they missed their window to hit a bowl. They both lost to Stanford, so it kind of killed them both. So
this is really their best chance, each one for a potential fifth win of the year. Well, let's take a team that already has a fifth win at home trying to become bowl eligible. Purdue going to Northwestern. The Wildcats are 5-5, guys. David Braun is likely going to win Big Ten Coach of the Year, and I think that probably gets him an actual contract. How do you not give the guy a chance to keep this up? Because I have no idea how he's done this. Purdue actually looked much better last week with a win. So Purdue favored by 3, though, in Evanston, over under 46.5.
You know, I like what I've seen with Northwestern. You know, it's crazy to say that they're playing good football, and you know, got their quarterback back last week, and they look they look sharp against Wisconsin, and I think they can beat Purdue and make a bowl game. It's crazy to say that, but I don't think anyone would have ever expected to win more than two games this year. And
yeah,
knocking on the door of bowl eligibility, and yeah, hats off to them considering what they walked into the season with. So,
and it's shocking. But it's the Big Ten West, and Purdue's going to win.
Like, yeah, well, I mean Purdue beat Minnesota last week by handily, if I remember right. So,
yeah. I mean, it's the Big Ten West. Purdue's going to win, and you know, somehow Nebraska wins their last two and sneaks in and become the Big Ten West champs, and we end up in Indianapolis where we beat Ohio State or Michigan, and then you know. End up
there's
in the
Rose Kool-Aid, Bowl. Folks. There's the Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid's back. All right. Honky back, and the Kool-Aid's magically returned. You know?
That's right. All right. The Ville, 9-1. Talking about Purdue, Jeff Brohm's new team, Louisville, -1 going to Miami, over under at 46. Hurricanes are 6-4, I believe, and trying to salvage what they can out of a lost season. Louisville could be eyeing a New Year's Six Bowl if they keep this up. What do you think about the Cards?
I mean,
go ahead, Reb. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I picked Louisville. I think they're the better team. I mean, Miami,
it's a surprisingly low number. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm surprised I'm surprised it's basically a pick 'em at this point. And, and, you know, Louisville's look good out there and they've done everything to prove that, you know, I think that they're capable of winning this game. And I think that they do because they've got their eye on the prize while Miami is just, you know, I mean, they went full Miami earlier this year and did the whole fumble on third and game winning drive. So, yep.
Boomer, what do you think?
Yeah. Give me Louisville on this one. Miami's coming off that, you know, emotional loss to Florida State and they could have won that game. So,
yep.
Louisville's playing to, you know, for the ACC championship berth, I guess, and another shot at FSU. So, yeah, or a shot at FSU, I guess. But, yeah, go ahead. Give me Louisville.
All right. Utah at Arizona, another really small line here. Wildcats by 1 at home. One of the surprise teams of the year, over under at 45. Utah trying to salvage their season a little bit. Any thoughts on this one?
I'm going to take Arizona on it. I'm riding that train.
Wildcats are on a roll, hitching yourself to the wagon. Boomer?
Yeah, that's a tough one. God. Every time I've picked against Arizona, they end up winning. So let's just
will you please pick take Utah, please? I appreciate for the sake of me having to listen to my dad complain if Arizona loses, please.
Fine. Utah. I'll take Utah just to make Rob happy. How about that? this is make Rob happy night here.
So. Thank you. Yes. Having a good day. Let's
all right. The fun one, Illinois versus Iowa in Iowa City. The Hawks are favored by 3.5, over under, still holding up at 30.5 right now.
Take the under.
Yeah. The under keeps on hitting. Now, Illinois has been scoring points, though, and they have their backup quarterback, Paddock, is way better than Luke Altmyer and is thrown for 500 yards a game. So, really intriguing to see how this actually plays out.
He's not
going to
do that against Iowa's defense. He's just
not. We're going to find out.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, Iowa, I would take Iowa, maybe I would take Iowa on both the spread.
Yeah, they're
going to
play
under.
That cover three. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I might Boomer? Even bet it down a little bit.
Yeah. Gosh. I'm interested to watch this. I do want to see how Iowa holds up against Illinois, who's found offense lately. I don't know if Iowa's played anyone outside of Penn State that's got an offense with a pulse so far, but they have shut down everyone they've played, and I don't know how they'll react to an over-under in the 30s. That's just kind of surprising. I don't know if they'll.
Well, this is the eyes on Big Bowl, you know?
Yeah. That is true.
And quite frankly, do not get me wrong here, no matter what I say, I'm rooting for Illinois because they are the ones that are going to pave us our path to the Big Ten championship games.
Well,
so,
Iowa's our.
Yeah, they're. Iowa's a co-champ already, and right. Illinois. But if they win the Big Ten West, if things go the right way for them, so.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the Big Ten West. Everybody's got a shot somehow. Even Purdue probably somehow. You know.
Yeah. So, but I mean, at the same time, and so if we go in and we beat Iowa, I believe that it would be us who goes to the Big Ten championship.
But Iowa would clinch it if they win this game. Because I've heard.
Yes.
Got correct.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Go Illinois.
And Boomer, do they play for something?
I don't believe so. If they do, it would be a really obscure trophy they forgot about. So,
all right. That's unusual. Yeah. All right. UGA, number one team in the country, given 10.5 to Tennessee in Knoxville, over under 59.5.
First of all, I want to know what two SEC teams are doing playing each other this week. All right.
Yeah, this
well,
is
they
the
thought it was
week.
Tennessee Martin when they
booked the schedule.
Typo. Yeah.
Yeah. Tennessee coming off a loss to Missouri where they did not look good. Georgia been rolling. To me, this is Bulldogs all the way. I don't know.
Yeah, no question. I mean, yeah, and Georgia too. I mean, you know, especially now that the playoff numbers are coming out, top four, all that. I mean, Georgia has everything to lose, and they've been playing like it the last couple of weeks for sure. So it is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tennessee. Yep. I hope they're volunteering to lose this week. I think that's pretty much
all right. This is the potential exit of Chip Kelly, supposedly rumored to be getting fired after this game, especially if they lose. But UCLA, crosstown freeway series here is going to USC Memorial Coliseum. Trojans favored by 6.5, over under at 65.5. Very tempted to take the over here again, even though I lost in the USC Oregon over last week. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's entertaining how they don't want to fire Chip Kelly because they don't want to screw this up, but then let it all leak out anyway. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, USC is good for at least pushing 30 points in this game. UCLA has just been struggling mightily lately, so I don't know what they're up to. So.
Lost Arizona State last week. Yeah,
lost Arizona. Just haven't looked good for about 3 weeks now. Even Colorado, they didn't look great, so... Yeah, go ahead and give me USC. They'll salvage a win out of this series at least.
These two teams are going to put up 80 points combined too, so take the over.
All right, Rob takes the over. Another rivalry game. K-State -8 going to Lawrence to take on the Jayhawks of Kansas, over under at 56.5. This is an intriguing matchup here, and two teams still playing for a lot.
Yeah, what's the status of Kansas's QB? I think that's the big question on that. Is he going to play?
Which one, I guess, for this
point? That's a better question. Yeah, aren't they all hurt at this point? And
then yeah, because even Bean was – so I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah.
K-State being -8 kind of reflects that potentially, I suppose.
Yeah, I think at this point, just for health issues, I'll take K-State in this. So I like Kansas a lot when they're healthy, but they're just not right now. And
yep.
Yeah.
K-State, so Ronald Baylor Kansas last week. Mm-hmm. KU came back against Texas Tech. They were down 13-0. Almost were able to kind of pull that off, but lost on a field goal. All right, let's get out of here with one more. And it's a late night game on Saturday. And Washington trying to continue their undefeated season, going to Corvallis, Oregon State. I think I saw this right. Maybe I put this in wrong. Oregon State -2.5. Is that right?
Well, let me go over check draft
games. I was going to ask if that was right, Dave. So, yeah.
I bet it's Washington. I probably put it on the wrong side.
Yeah, because this is the kind of game where that would be typical of the Pac-12 for a Pac-12 team to knock out a Pac-12 team at the very end of the season. Sure. You know what I mean? Like that would be the most Pac-12 thing in the history of the world, right there. So, I mean, I'm sure that they will figure out a way to screw this up because, I mean, they're not even in the Final Four at this point. You're right. It is Oregon State at -2.5.
Got a -2.5.
So,
yeah.
Obviously Vegas knows the same thing we do. Which is that like Pac-12 knows how to screw up college football playoff better than any other conference out there right now. And, you know, because we know that, you know, Ohio State and Michigan play each other. And when they do, you know, one of those teams is going to get knocked out of the playoff talk, and Washington's supposed to be the team that walks in. And now
I think Oregon is also positioning themselves to be in that Pac-12 championship game and would love to rather have Washington there so they could beat the team that they lost to and erase that. But I think Oregon's still going to be there. I think a lot of people feel that Oregon has enough cred to get in, but that'll be interesting. But this will be a really important game here for the Pac-12 in their final season as it's constituted.
Yeah, it'd be nice if there's some kind of actual analytics used to decide this as opposed to just how these guys feel and put them
in.
But, you know.
Well, we've gone down that path before, Rob. Computers have made decisions.
Well, I know, but there can be a good combination of both, and it's
They have all the data. Right, it's supposed to have the human.
You would think.
We don't need to debate the college football playoff at this present moment. Yeah. All right, guys. Any other games that I missed?
No, those I think the big ones of the week. You know.
Yep. Wisconsin still up to a 5.5 point favorite now. Is that right?
They are five.
Was 4.5 when I looked earlier today.
It was 5 earlier today when I looked, but 4.5.
The show was 4.5. Yeah,
between 4.5 and 5.5.
The money line is actually moving. It's at 192, minus 192 now. It was minus like 201 earlier today. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, it should be another good Saturday before we head into the Thanksgiving week. Let's get out of here with some parting shots. And I will start with you, Boomer. What do you got for me?
Well, it looks like Creighton's opened up a bit of a run in the second half. They're up 53-45 over Iowa when they were tied. So, but that's still got some slugfest back and forth. And I don't have any, you know, thing really exciting, but, you know, I just really hope we get the win this weekend so we can get that bowl bid. You know, you just see some of those projections out there for bowl projections. And one caught my eye just earlier today. It was, I think USA Today had Nebraska versus Southern Cal in the Las Vegas Bowl a couple days before Christmas.
Oh, my goodness.
Would that not be just the most exciting thing in the world to watch? You get a top quality defense against a team that just has no defense whatsoever. And, oh, in Vegas, no less, a couple days before Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen this in Las Vegas versus Utah, too. That's another one.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
Seen.
Yeah, that would just
be awesome. You got to get one more victory to figure it out, but it would be fun to have.
And I'd really rather get it this week just to be safe. Although, if you did have to get it against Iowa, that would add a certain zest to that game. So,
yeah. Yeah.
At home. It,
you know. Getting a victory against either one of these two teams will make the fan base forget the last two losses relatively.
Oh, absolutely. Big, yeah.
So, all right, Rob, what do you got?
Well, I just want to remind everyone it is a night game on Saturday night. As Dion Pryor here is saying that it's a crap night game. But either way, just remember, you know, do some nice things. Wake up, make the family some breakfast, do some chores around the house, get some things done so that you can settle in and watch the Huskers secure a bowl game.
But if you're in Madison, then just go ahead and drink all day. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Eat some cheese curds and butter brats and. Yeah.
Go Big Red.
GBR. All right, guys. Great stuff. That was awesome little guest by Honky. I haven't seen that buddy in a while, so that's great. But, you know, the show is really you two at this point. So I appreciate you always joining me on the Redcast. For now, let's call that another Go Big Redcast.
Go Big Red.
Heard at Sports Network Production.